Hey, do you prefer to find the joy in life, or do you just want some help with that? If so, you're in the right place. So come on in and join the Joy Bunny clan. This is the My Slice of Life podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the My Slice of Life podcast. This season is all about what's so super about the supernatural, and this week we are going to dive into Loch Ness and see if there really is a Loch Ness monster. But before we even go there, and trust me, I will be taking you there, do me a little favour. Leave me a review, leave me a like, tell somebody you know about it, help spread the word about this little tiny podcast, and I will be forever grateful. Thank you. Now, let's get back to the Loch Ness monster. Before discussing the monster, I think it's worth painting a picture of Loch Ness. And I would like to stress it is a loch. It is not a loch or a lake. Just want to put that in there and clear up any doubt you may have. It is a freshwater loch in the Scottish Highlands, southwest of Inverness. Now, I'll give you a few details here about its size, and that should help paint a really good picture if you've never actually been there or looked it up before. Loch Ness is approximately 23 miles long. It's about 1.7 miles at its widest part, and the average depth is about 132 metres, roughly 433 feet. The maximum depth is approximately 230 metres, about 745 feet. It would be the maximum. The visibility is usually classed as exceptionally low due to the high peat content of the surrounding soil around the loch. Loch Ness is the second largest Scottish loch by surface area. The biggest one is actually at Loch Lomond, but due to its depth, it's the largest by volume in Great Britain. It's the second deepest loch in Scotland. Loch Morar is first, and it contains more water than all the lakes in England and Wales combined. So we are talking a lot of water. There are 9 villages dotted around the loch, and also Urquhart Castle, which you may have heard of. And Drumna Drochet is the village that has the Loch Ness Centre and exhibition. Should you ever be that way, and that's where you'll be wanting to go, so they can tell you all about the area and its history. Now, the loch is one of a series of interconnected murky bodies of water. It's not a standalone loch. Like, the south end is fed by the River Oich, the north end flows into Loch Dochfer, and so on. I mean, there's a lot of different waterways feed into and out of it. And from the north end, like I mentioned, it goes up to River Ness, which then goes into the North Sea. So it's not an isolated body of water by any stretch. And that also means you get many types of fish in it. Things like European eel, northern pike, European sea sturgeon, Atlantic salmon, sea trout, to name a few. There are actually many more, but that's a few in case you're thinking, is there any life in that? Yeah, there's a lot of life in it, which brings us neatly to a life form known as Nessie. Yes, the Loch Ness monster, often described as a large, long-necked beast with one or more humps sticking out of the water. Think, if you remember your dinosaurs, a plesiosaur seems to be the one that was mentioned over and over again. And from what I can find out, August 1933 to be precise, the local paper, the Courier, published an account of George Spicer's alleged sighting. But was that the first? No. Come back in time with me. There are stories of a monster being in the area way back to the 7th century AD, and it's said that the Irish monk St. Columba, well known for getting rid of all of Ireland's snakes, he was over here, he travelled the Scottish Islands, he travelled all over this place, and he encountered local residents burying a man by the River Ness. Now notice I'm not saying Loch Ness, it was up by the river, but they're interconnected. So he asked the locals what was going on, and they told him that a man had been swimming in the river when he was mauled and dragged underneath by a water beast. So St. Columba reportedly then sent one of his followers to swim across the river, and the beast approached him. But then St. Columba made the sign of the cross and said, "Go no further. Do not touch the man. Go back at once." And the story goes, the creature stopped in its tracks as if it was pulled back with ropes and fled. However, as good as St. Columba was, he did not get rid of the beast. Now, bearing in mind that was 7th century AD, there have been a lot of reported sightings. Now, I'm not going to go through them all because, seriously, there are loads of them. And I actually have a sighting at the end that I want to tell you about. This is an exclusive, never heard before anywhere, a story given to me, and I really want to share it with you, so stick around for that. You do not want to miss it, I promise you. So let's go back to these other sightings first. So around 1871, 1872, October this time, a D. Mackenzie of Balnane, which is a small village near Drumadrochit, said that he saw an object resembling a log or upturned boat wriggling and churning up the water. 1888, a large, stubby-legged animal likened to a salamander was reported. So, you know what a salamander looks like? It's kind of dragon-like. Are we going for this, or is it just a big fish? Stay with me with this, because there's a lot of other descriptions coming. In 1933, the Inverness Courier, that's the local paper, published an article about a sighting by Aldie Mackay, who was driving on the A82. Now, that's the main road by the loch, and I say main road. Here's a tip from, I'll say a local, I'm as local as I can call myself. That road is horrendous. Most of the roads up here are horrendous. If you are from America, you have, from what I've seen in the movies, big, wide, straight roads that can take many cars. We don't have them here. The A82 is an A road, so it's better than a B road, but it's still not great. These are windy roads, lots of bends, and they have a few spaces along the way where people can stop with their cars and take pictures of the loch and stop for sightseeing and things like that. There are a lot of crashes on this road. There's a lot of, especially in summer, a lot of traffic, a lot of these like camper vans and people who are not used to driving these roads. People who are not used to driving on the left-hand side of the road. We drive on the left. Please be aware, this is it's not the most dangerous road in the area, but it's not great. It's not easy. If you are the driver, take your time and keep your concentration. Do not look at the water until you find a place to stop. I just wanted to add that because they throw in A82, so people are going to know what it is. If you're not from here, you don't know what it is. Anyway, Aldie Mackay was driving on this road from hell on the 15th of April 1933 with her husband, and they saw an enormous creature with the body of a whale rolling in the water in the loch. Now here's a quote. "The beast, in taking the final plunge, sent out waves that were big enough to have been caused by a passing steamer." Now that sounds pretty damn big to me. Now it should be noted that when Aldie Mackay was interviewed in the 1980s, so this is quite a while after her sighting, so she was interviewed about the incident and she did admit to knowing there had been an oral tradition of a beast in the loch well before her claimed sighting. Doesn't mean she wasn't telling the truth, but she was aware of it. Now, also in 1933, we go to the 22nd of July that year. This is the George Spicer sighting that I mentioned earlier. So here's a wee bit more detail about that. It says George Spicer and his wife reported seeing, quote, "a most extraordinary form of animal," end quote, "cross the road in front of their car. They said the creature had a large body about 4 feet high and 25 feet long and a long, wavy, narrow neck, slightly thicker than an elephant's trunk and as long as the 10 to 12 foot width of the road. They saw no limbs. It lurched across the road towards the loch, which was about 20 yards, 18 metres away, leaving a trail of broken undergrowth in its wake." Now, Spicer said it was the nearest thing to a dragon or prehistoric animal he had ever seen in his life. He said the creature had an animal in its mouth. That was in quotes, the animal. It doesn't say what animal. Now, I just want to point out here, if he's telling the truth, now that surely would prove the whole there isn't enough fish in the loch to support a monster theory. Just blows that apart. That's assuming it eats what's in the loch. Now, according to what this guy Spicer is saying, George Spicer, it doesn't eat what's in the loch. It comes out the loch and gets something, then goes back in. However, in 2013, researchers at Columbia University, in inverted commas, proved his story to be fake, saying he got the idea from a King Kong movie, which came out that year and was very popular. I believe George Spicer was from London, if I remember correctly from what I read, and they said that the King Kong movie, remember the old black and white one, had come out that year and it was very popular in the local cinemas in London at the time. How they can prove in 2013 what somebody said in 1933 was not true, I don't know. But they've put two and two together. They've either came up with four or some other figure that they've just pulled out their hat. I want to say something else, but I'll keep it a hat. However, two other witnesses, one in 1933 and one in 1934, claimed to see the beast as well. Now, the one in 1933, that was a man called Hugh Gray. He took a photo, which experts, in my head, I put that in inverted commas as well, because if you've heard my previous episodes, you'll know how I feel about these experts. They say it's his dog. The picture is a picture of his dog with a stick in its mouth. Now, I've seen the picture, and all I can say is if that's true, he has got the weirdest looking dog I have ever seen. Both those witness testimonies, the 1933 and 34 one, they've been put down to seeing an otter or a seal. I've never seen an otter or a seal with a very long neck, and I think most people would know the difference, especially in those days. I mean, maybe, I know people now, we have access to a lot of information, but in those days, people were not ignorant to the animals around them, you know. Not completely. These people weren't stupid. And the witness in 1934, he drew a sketch of what he saw. And I've seen that. And it looks like this plesiosaur dinosaur. Added to the fact he was a veterinary student. He knows animals. But the experts still said it was probably an otter. Make of that what you will. So now we come to the famous surgeon's photograph of 1934, and this is probably the one that people are most familiar with. Allegedly taken by Robert Kenneth Wilson and published in the Daily Mail on the 21st of April 1934. He was apparently a gynecologist and he didn't want his name associated with it. That's why it became known as the surgeon's photograph. Now, that photo has since been found to be a hoax. There was a book put out in 1999 called Nessie, the Surgeon's Photograph Exposed, and they discussed this in detail in the book. They said the creature was reportedly a toy submarine built by Christopher Sperling, who was the son-in-law of a man called Marmaduke Wetherill, that's a name, and who was a British South African actor, screenwriter, producer, director and big game hunter. And this guy, Sperling, the son-in-law, he admitted the photograph was a hoax in 1991. However, all this doesn't put people off. People do not give up. They've never given up. There were sonar readings done in 1954, done using a fishing boat called Rival 3. The crew noted a large object keeping pace with the vessel at a depth of about 146 metres, roughly 479 feet. It was detected for 800 metres, get this, that's 2,600 feet, before contact was lost. There have been many other sightings and hoaxes since. Sadly, people do like to pull a fast one with this. Sightings or other sonar images are quickly put down to, say, otters, seals, algae, believe it or not, somebody said it was a clump of algae that they'd photographed, or some other known animal. Like the experts just say, no, we know what this is and it's not what you think. But that does not deter Nessie hunters, and many more expeditions have taken place. They've used drones, sonar equipment, submersible cameras and the like. It just goes on and on. It never stops. In fact, in 1987, there was another operation done. It was Operation Deep Scan, They used 24 boats with echo-sounding equipment, and they went right across the width of the loch. They found a lot of debris at the bottom of the loch, which you would expect to find, but they took a lot of photographs, and motion was detected in three of their pictures. That doesn't sound much, does it? Just three of their pictures, but they found it. And a man called Daryl, I think it's Lawrence, he's a sonar expert, and he said, quote, "There's something here that we don't understand, and there's something here that's larger than a fish. Maybe some species that hasn't been detected before. I don't know." End quote. In 2018, there was a DNA survey done of the water in the loch, bearing in mind they've been told it's all seals, it's otters, it's whatever, right? This DNA survey found no DNA of large fish, such as sharks or catfish, but they found no otter or seal DNA either. But there was a lot of eel DNA. So hold that thought. If you go on to jmir.org, there's an article there called "If It's Real, Could It Be an Eel?" And they've done this study because people try to explain Nessie sightings as eel sightings. Yeah, you've just seen a massive eel. That's all it is. There's nothing weird going on here. Move on. And their study that they carried out, they wanted to, and this is a quote, "estimate the probability of observing eels at least as large as have been proposed using catch data from Loch Ness and other freshwater bodies in Europe." Now the results, I'm just going to read what I got off their site. Okay, so this is quote, this is the result. "The chances of finding a large eel in Loch Ness are around 1 in 50,000 for a 1 metre specimen, which is reasonable given the loch's fish stock, and suggests some sightings of smaller unknown animals may be accounted for by large eels. However, the probability of finding a specimen upwards of 6 metres is essentially zero. Therefore, eels probably do not account for sightings of larger animals." And the conclusion stated in this report, quote, "The existence of exceedingly large eels in the loch is not likely based on purely statistical considerations," end quote. So there's no otter DNA, there's no seal DNA, there's eel DNA, but statistically, your chances of seeing an eel big enough to account for what these people have reported, practically zero. Just saying, just going by what these experts have come up with. Now, wherever you stand on this theory of the Loch Ness Monster, be it legend, hoax, misidentification, wishful thinking, or fact, before you make up your mind completely, I want to tell you a story that I was given. Now, like I said, this story hasn't been heard before anywhere. This is an absolute exclusive. Also, it's not a recent sighting. I have to tell you that it's not recent. And the reason I don't have the exact date for this, I will discuss later. I'll find as close a date as I can and put that in the description below so that you've got some idea of when it was. All I can say, it wasn't in the last 5 years, I can tell you that. However, this story is about a group of six friends who decided to go for a diving trip. They wanted a break, short holiday, a trip, and they decided, let's go diving in Loch Ness. And you might think, big deal, so what? These are six special forces guys. Four were serving SBS personnel, and if you don't know what that is, it's the special boat service. The other two were former SBS and were serving SAS at the time. These guys know what they're doing. They've all highly trained and experienced divers. We're not talking weekend amateurs here. So like I say, these guys, high pressure job, decide let's go and have a bit of fun and go for a short diving trip. Just for one night. They were in the pub and it came about as a joke. Ah, come on, let's go find the monster. You know, few drinks in, thought it'd be a laugh. So they packed up their stuff and off they went. It was around May time. So the weather was quite good. It was a quieter time of the year. It wasn't heavy with tourists. They had planned one day for the diving trip, took their own Zephyr boat with them, so they were very well equipped. They also had looked at the map and decided to do their diving trip based on, if you can imagine, the long side that's got Urquhart Castle. They're opposite the castle. Okay, so not most people drive down the Urquhart Castle side. It's very picturesque. So this group of six, like I say, Special Forces guys, decided to use the opposite side of the castle for their trip. Now, these guys are planners. They leave nothing to chance, and they had planned to go into the water two at a time, buddy diving. So if you imagine just pairs, one, two, three. The first pair, they went in, they spent around 15 minutes or so, like a test dive. They went down about 25 to 30 feet. The visibility, they said, was reasonable. Okay, just checking things out, not too bad, pretty good, that was fine. So then the second pair went in, had a wee dive about, they returned. Now at this point, dive team one went back in because dive team three, they'd had a slight problem with their equipment. A demand valve had a bit of an issue, so they were working on that to get it fixed. So dive team one, dive team two, they were taking it in turns to go in and out. Now, dive team two, when they came up, they wanted some rope to be used just to tie around. Again, it's a safety issue. Like I said, these guys are well clued into safety. It's not like rope that we would imagine. It's diving rope. It's thinner, but it's very, very strong. Tie it to your belt so you can, you know, follow the rope down as you go. So they went in as a dive team two. They were in for about 25 to 30 minutes and there was a tug on the rope. One of dive team two came up and he said, "You're never going to believe what we found." Now he was smiling and laughing. They'd found a musket down there. And you can imagine the group thinking, "Whoa, what we're going to find here?" He said, "There's more down here." So they put that aside. And what he did say, he said to the dive leader, "There's steps down here." He's like, "What?" He said, "There's steps." He said, "The visibility is good, but we're walking down, it was about 15 to 18 steps, and he said, there's all sorts of muskets and swords down there." Now these steps, stone, very wide and down, so you kind of, basically they were sort of bumming their way down it, if that makes sense, to get down these steps. So this guy from dive team two, he went back down, and then the two of them surfaced about 5 minutes later with another musket. Now by this time, dive team three, they're ready to go. They've got their equipment fixed. They are also tied to rope. There's a really good, happy atmosphere. They're finding these treasures. So the guys are excited. So dive team three, they're walking down the steps, you know, bumming down, walking down, best you can. And they were sitting on the last step, about, like I said, about 18 down. And the visibility was just black down there. You can imagine you're going further down. And like I said earlier, there's a lot of peat in the water, you know, because of the soil. And because of that, they would write notes to each other to communicate. And they were saying, you know, "What do you want to do? I can't see anything. What, you know, do you want to go on?" Bearing in mind, you're sitting on a huge stone step that you didn't know was there when you first went in. You can't see a thing in front of you. Special forces or not, there's going to come a time where you're like, "Nah, that's enough." So they decided, look, it's really deep, it's way too dark, and it was freezing cold. There's no point going any further down, let's not risk it. So they went back up. So then, bearing in mind, these guys are down for a wee while, they come back up, so they're taking it in turns. So dive team one went back down. After about 10 to 15 minutes, one of those divers pulls on the rope. Okay, so there's a problem. So the third diver went in. These guys are using code on the rope, so they know straight away something's wrong. And one of the guys comes out the water at that point shouting, "There's a problem." And he jumps out the water. So the third diver that's went in, he has a look for the other guy, follows the rope down. You know, the rope's tight. He couldn't find him. He couldn't see him. Now it's pitch black down there. He's tugging on the rope, got no response. There's just waves of this black rush coming past. Now, bearing in mind, this might be a loch, but it's tidal under there, right? Things are rushing past you in a wave. It might be reasonable for a minute, and then whoosh, this black cloud rushes over you, and you can't see a thing. So he followed the rope down as far as he could, but with all the black, he panicked a bit. I was told this. He panicked a bit, he came back up. They could not find that guy. Another one of the divers was going to go back in. The other said no. They pulled him back and said, he's gone, leave it. But with the discussion, you can imagine these are special forces guys. They're like, no, I won't say exactly what I was told because use your imagination. He's our mate. We're going in. So two of them went back in. They follow the rope down. Now, it was tight. It was taut, as if something was stuck. They kept going down. They could hardly see a thing down there. It was so dark and murky and freezing cold. Then about 50 to 60 feet down, past the end of the steps, they found that guy. They found him, but he was catatonic. He was still breathing, but when they first saw him, they actually thought he was dead. He was frozen in fear. His face was frozen. His arms and legs were up and bent, couldn't move. I mean, he was like a statue down there. They got him up as quick as they could, got him on the grass, got all the gear off him. His face was white as a ghost, is how it was described to me. Pure fear on this guy's face. Now, when he went in that water, he was a blonde-haired man. They took that gear off him. His hair had turned pure white. He came out a totally different guy from the one who had gone into that water. His mouth was open, but nothing was coming out. No words were coming out, nothing. And like I say, his limbs were stuck in place like a statue. They made some calls. As you can imagine, they've got people they can call when they've got an emergency. And they got him medevaced out of there. This guy needed medical treatment, instant, get him out. Helicopter turned up, took him away. Now, as soon as he's in the helicopter, the others start to talk, you know, what's going on. They're all stunned, as you can imagine. But one of the other guys swears he got a glimpse of something huge and fast down there. And he described it like a huge rubber submarine. If you imagine the size of a submarine, he said this thing was enormous, but it moved like it was made of rubber. And he got a glimpse of it, but he did not hang about. Now, because they were special forces and because they'd had to have one of their guys medevaced, even though this was on a recreation trip, all of them, the other five, had to make individual reports. And to do that, they were taken to separate locations. They made the reports about what happened and they were told, shut up, this never happened. They were then sent on various jobs all over the place. So they were split up and sent away as quick as. About 6 weeks later, one of the team, he found out, I'm going to just say this victim, I'm going to call him a victim. He found out their friend, this victim, he wasn't taken to a medical hospital when that helicopter picked him up. He was taken to the local psychiatric hospital, not a medical ward. So he went to visit him and he said this guy was a shell. No other way to describe it. He was a shell. Completely catatonic, never spoke the whole time he was in there, and he said there was no reaction. Here's his friend standing in front of him, come to visit him, and there was no reaction. It was as if the guy had died. It was just a shell sitting there. So his friend returned to visit the following weekend, and he asked to speak to the same matron, you know, I want to visit my friend, and he was told she had died 2 days earlier of a heart attack. He was also refused access to his friend, but demanded to see him. And he'd been moved to a totally different ward in the hospital. Now, I want you to imagine this hospital was one of the old style. The rooms were huge. They could hold a lot of beds. But this guy, this victim, and I don't have his name, and I'm sorry, but I don't have his name, but he was the only guy in that whole bay. Nobody else was in with him. Completely isolated. And nothing had changed. He was still, the way he was described to me was he was physically alive, but mentally, he was dead. He was gone. In total, the man went to visit his friend 3 times, and each time the result was the same. There was no reaction from his friend. There was nothing. Just absolutely, he was gone. He was just gone. So he got in touch with the other friends and let them know what was going on, because they didn't know. They didn't know. They'd all been off on separate jobs all over the place. They didn't know what had happened to him. Now, when this friend came back from another job, he found out that hospital had been closed down. So he made a few phone calls again to the rest of the guys, and one of them said he was told not to speak to this person. In fact, the whole group were told This trip never happened. That guy never existed. There's no record of that man. And that's how it was left. They weren't allowed to discuss it. They couldn't find out anymore because, according to the records, he never existed in the first place. And that trip that I've just told you about, it never happened. So you tell me, does the Loch Ness Monster exist? I know what I think. And I know when I get a story like this from a credible source, I'm not going to put this on the hoax pile. No way. To have somebody wiped from memory like that because of what he experienced, I just find that disgusting. That's why I've told you the story. I debated whether or not to bring the story to you, but to be honest, I don't think this man should be forgotten. I think this is too important to just be left swept under the carpet and forgotten about. You make up your own mind about what you saw. I know what I think, and I certainly know what the rest of his team think. And that concludes this week's episode, friends. I really hope you got something out of this week's episode. I would love to know your thoughts on this. Hoaxes? Yes, there have been hoaxes. But there have also been some sightings which can't be explained very easily, or at all. Let me know what you think in the comments below. Don't forget to check out the links below. They will take you to all sorts of wonderful, magical places, help spread the word about this podcast. If your friends aren't into this kind of thing, remind them this is not a paranormal channel. I cover all sorts of things. If they're interesting to me, I will bring them to you. I have a completely different topic lined up for next season. So if they're not into this, don't worry, there will be something coming up that they will enjoy. But until next time, friends, you take care of yourself.